I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
What if what we call public opinion was just a manufactured narrative that makes it easier to convince people that if their views are different, then there's something wrong with that, or there's something wrong with them?
There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Please shut down the system.
And now for Newsreel. This is your host, Maltos.
It is a good day. This is Mike reporting to you from the internet for Sunday, December 14th, 2014. You are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening in and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along with our news stories and check our facts by going to newsreel.ca. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk each and every Sunday afternoon at 1400 hours Pacific Time or 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Yeah, well, I guess it's been a few weeks, about 2 weeks or so, since I've released another episode of what show is this? Newsreel, I was going to say, yeah. I was thinking of patrolling, but I don't do patrolling, so, huh. So it's been a few weeks, and I need to put this out there right now. Like, I'm running this by myself right now, like, with there's like no redundancy in it, so there's no other host at the current time. So I'm unfortunately affected by work and whatnot. I'm tripping over my words here. I imagine that everybody understands that, so that's fine. Just as a heads up, though, within the next pretty much until January, it's going to be hit or miss. I might put out more episodes. I might not. Work's kind of getting kind of stupid right now. I mean, the workload that there is, and also just they're being stupid. So I have no idea what the hell's going on with that. Also, you know, I got some other stuff to do too. So hey, sorry, but I think I'll probably hammer out at least one more by the end of this year. But we'll see. Hopefully I can get them all done. Like, what's it, two or three? I think it's two more weeks. But yeah, don't fret. Newsreel will still be here. And a few people know, but I'm actually planning on doing this for hopefully at least 100 episodes. So right now we're sitting at 27 out of 100. Put that of a potential 100. So we'll see how that goes. But that's about 2 years worth of work, I suppose. Also, I need to apologize, in retrospect here, for the news stories from the last month or so, because not that they were bad or anything like that, but there were other news stories which I guess came through the newsreel.ca website, our forum that we have on there, or that is on that website now. And I was checking it every week, or every week that I recorded a show. But the thing is, for some stupid reason, there wasn't any information showing up from, I don't know, past the end of September or October of this year. So I don't know what the hell was up with that. But I just checked it today, and there's a whole shitload of stuff there for the last two and a half months, just up until a few days ago. It's like, holy crap. So I have no idea what the hell was up with that, but it wasn't updating, or maybe I wasn't sorting it properly. I was too tired or something. I don't know. But I'm sorry to anybody who's... stories I did not get out there. I went through today and I picked some up from there, but holy crap, there's a lot, and just I'm so sorry. I don't know, it could have been an issue with myself, but it could have just been an issue because this is all done on Google Drive, bastard fucking company, but whatever. So I'll just play my Google, that works for me, damn Skynet. Anyways, so I just want to get all that stuff out there. Anyways, into the news, in thought crime news. Thank you to Kevin as a Geek for this one. UK bans spanking and female ejaculation in porn. Yeah, this is from December 2nd on, I guess the website's called Salon. I think I've ever heard of that. But anyways, a long list of sex acts often associated with female pleasure can no longer be featured in porn shot in the UK. Okay. Porn produced in the United Kingdom, i.e. England, i.e. Britain, Great Britain, whatever you want to call it, they go by 1,800 different names. The porn produced in the UK quietly incurred some major restrictions on Monday via an amendment to the 2003 Communications Act that bans a long list of sex acts from appearing in adult films. And there's a link right there you can click on. While the new restrictions do not affect porn produced outside of the UK and do not prevent people from watching such porn, they do require on-demand adult films to meet the same guidelines as adult films available on DVD in sex shops. Alrighty. That means eliminating all sorts of different performances from spanking to strangulation, many of which are typically associated with female pleasure. Strangulation, female pleasure. Oh, I guess some people get off on that. according to The Independent, click on the link there, the British Board of Film Censors has banned strangulation, face-sitting, and fisting from UK-produced porn under the auspices of preventing potential fatalities. The censorship board considers the acts life-endangering. I guess that depends on who's sitting on your face. Other banned sex acts include caning. Caning. Is that what I think it is? Just smacking somebody with a cane? Aggressive whipping. Penetration by any object associated with violence. So a knife or a gun. or a baseball bat. Physical or verbal abuse. Okay. Urolagnia. I'm messing that one up. Perhaps better known as water sports. Okay, so, and female ejaculation. So, female ejaculation and female ejaculation. Or, I guess, pissing on each other and ejaculation. Oh, and yes, spanking. Several of the now banned acts, for example, all that life-threatening face-sitting, are cornerstones of femdom pornography, which carries explicit, no pun intended, messages of female domination. Well, yeah, femdom. Agency and pleasure. Additionally, regulations on physical and verbal abuse, for instance, completely ignore that concept of consent, despite the fact that it is critical to BDSM and healthy sexuality in general. As pornographer Erica Lust, that's an awesome name, notes in an op-ed for The Independent, click on the link there, the measures seem to be part of a larger effort to suppress sexuality in order to present one normalized view of pleasure, which effectively ignores pleasure for women. The rules have been openly presented as a way to safeguard children, quote unquote, which is a load of shit, because that stuff's available for free anywhere, and if the UK is, banning all that stuff from being done in UK porn productions, then, well, where's most of the porn on the planet come from? Probably United States or elsewhere, so... no restrictions there, so fuck you. But Lust says the government is going about protecting the kids all wrong, as they usually do. They always say, oh, it's about protecting the kids, protecting the innocent. To an extent, that shouldn't be the responsibility of the government. That should be the responsibility of the parents if there are issues with that. And again, like, if you're going to raise your children, you're going to raise them to a specific standard, and that standard is essentially your own standard, so whatever. Is it correct to teach our children that certain sexual acts are wrong and others not? Unquote, Lust writes. When a lot of these are 18 rules, I guess that's what they call any, if you're under 18 you can't watch it type thing, are targeted at censoring female pleasure, doesn't that perpetuate the poor gender education our children are already receiving? We should be teaching them about the importance of female pleasure, not censoring it. And that's true, because if you can have porn and you have a guy blows load, ejaculate, whatever you want to call it, but you can't have a woman do the same thing, which essentially, if you think about it, that biologically the parts are all the same, they're just configured differently. It's the same damn thing. So why are you censoring one and not the other? Unless they're both censored. I'm not sure. I haven't watched any British porn. So it's this is kind of an interesting thing. It's extremely stupid. I mean, there's the male version of all this stuff, essentially, and I'm assuming that's probably all good too. Whereas this is not. So it's like, what the hell? Anyways, that's all I got on that one. That's just so stupid. What the hell? Anyways, in the next story in UAV news, thank you to Yugo Saki for this one. And Yugo, yes, Kevin is a geek, sent this to me, but he said he found it on your wall. So yay. But this is pretty cool. This bio drone, damn it, people with a drone word, now this bio UAV grows itself and then melts into a puddle of sugar when it's done flying. Sweet. Literally, it's true. If the drone crashes into a sensitive place like a coral reef, it just harmlessly disappears. And civilian UAVs may someday deliver your pizza, but they'll also travel places that people can't easily go, mapping forest fires or natural disasters, tracking wildlife, and studying Mars. The further drones go, actually, they aren't going to do that in the future. They already are doing that in the future, or currently. They're actually doing that currently. Except for, yeah, they aren't delivering pizza yet, and I don't think they're on Mars yet. Unless you count a probe as a UAV, but it's not, because it's on the ground. The further drones go, the more it might make sense to construct them out of biological materials. A new bio-UAV could eventually be able to grow itself in remote locations, and if it gets lost in the wilderness, melt into a harmless puddle. Yes, yeah, scary concept that you have a UAV just growing itself somewhere. I think they mean somebody's building, like, producing it, and then if you lose it, then whatever. The shell of the drone is made from a mushroom-like material called mycelium, and cellulose coated with the same protein used to make wasps' nests waterproof. Inside the circuit board is printed with silver. Oh, silver. Most of the materials, apart from a few components like the motor, are biodegradable. Motor or motors? You got three of them on there. If it crashes in an environmentally sensitive place, such as a coral reef, then it can biodegrade, and it won't affect the coral as strongly, explains Ian Hull, a sophomore at Stanford University, who was part of a large team of students from Brown, Spelman, and Stanford who collaborated with researchers from NASA on the design of the prototype. We can also send it into environments where we might not expect it to return, he says. If we want to fly it over wildfires to see where it's spreading, or if there's a nuclear meltdown and we want to fly in to see what's going on with the radioactivity, we can send in the drone and it can send back data without returning. Yeah, good concept. Because, if you're going to fly your UAV into an area of fallout, and, you know, like Chernobyl, what was it? All the military equipment they used, all the helicopters and stuff, or a decent amount of it, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it, was contaminated and it's just sitting in the field in Chernobyl or Pripyat or whatever that place is called. Just kind of rotting away, and it's radioactive still. So yeah, you send a UAV in to a place like that, and it comes radioactive. You don't want it to come back. It's kind of, yeah, it's like, sorry. So this is a good idea for that. The mushroom material proved to be well suited for flying. Mushroom materials are inherently lightweight, biodegradable, and the strength-weight ratio of the material was preferable for this application, says Melissa Jacobson from Ecovative, the company that helped the students make the chassis. I can't even say that name, I'm sorry. Ecovative, it could go anyway. Insert picture there, which I didn't even see before. So I guess it shows you all the stuff, that how it's made and whatnot. Though the material would naturally biodegrade on its own, the students designed it to self-destruct. It won't degrade very quickly unless we give it a set of enzymes that will help break it down further, says Hall. Part of our project was making those enzymes that would only trigger upon certain conditions, such as impact or time. The biomaterial is also ideal for space, since it can grow itself. Man, what's up with the wording, people? 21st century, and there goes the English language. The biomaterial is also ideal for space since it can grow itself no matter where it is. The problem with trying to bring anything to space is it's expensive to take the mass up there, and you want anything you bring to be easily modified, says Hull. Instead of taking parts and backups, you can just take a tiny sample of the bacteria or fungus you need to grow something like this drone, UAV, not a drone. The UAV can also use bioengineered sensors, which can help reduce weight and eliminate the need for electric power. Other bioengineered cells developed from organisms that live in extreme environments help protect the UAV from high temperatures and radiation. The students carefully change the cells so they wouldn't affect the environment if the drone crashes and melts. The UAV was one of this year's entries in the International Genetically Engineered Machine Competition. Click on the link there for more information on that. That sounds just sexy. So that is very, very cool. Now you can fly a UAV and not have to worry about losing it and, killing entire species of endangered wildlife. Etc. Very, very cool. And the next story here in sexy space vehicles news. Thank you to Exec for this one. NASA is launching a spacecraft that will take humans to Mars. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This is December 2nd. NASA is launching its boldest test flight in decades this week. Yeah, look at that picture. That's just sexy. Wow. Anyways, I love rockets. In decades this week, an unmanned capsule will head off on Thursday to reach a distance of obviously this is one of the ones that was on the from newsreel.ca that I had gotten, and obviously the story last week because I didn't see anything in there, and yeah, so it's probably up there already. Damn it. An unmanned capsule will head off on Thursday, so that was a few days ago, to reach a distance of 3,600 miles from Earth, the farthest space mission with a craft designed to accommodate humans since the final Apollo 17 trip to the moon in 1972. Called Orion, the program will make a key initial step toward a human mission to Mars. Orion is also designed to excite the public's imagination for deep space exploration, much as the Apollo moon mission sparked an interest in space, and produced civilian engineering triumphs. With the first test flight on Thursday, NASA wants to make it abundantly clear that much of the hardware that can get humans to Mars already exists and is ready to fly. Yeah, it has existed and has been ready to fly, more or less, for the last 30, 40 years. People are just too damn lazy. My hope is that when we fly the capsule on Thursday, it will energize the public and energize that middle schooler who isn't quite sure what he wants to do, but he likes math and science, says Richard Watnott. I massacred your name, I'm sorry. An engineer at NASA's Langley Research Center. No one is about to strap on a suit and launch to Mars anytime soon. Despite NASA's excitement, the pace of development, driven by congressional funding, means that the next Orion test flight won't happen for nearly 3 years. Wow. Now think back to the Apollo days and the Gemini days and the Mercury days. All that stuff was happening like weeks and months apart instead of years apart. Horrible state that we're in now. Space-wise. And everything else-wise, really. The first flight with astronauts isn't planned to take place until 6 years from now. So that's better than no years from now. Or never happening. So that's actually good that they have a bit of a plan going on to get people back into space and actually on proper missions. I mean, don't get me wrong, the space shuttle was sexy and stuff like that, but come on, it was essentially low Earth orbit, more or less. Like, what the hell, you can't do much. There's no excitement in it. The first Orion mission to Mars isn't anticipated until about 2035. So yeah, 20 more years from now. Thanks, guys. Preceded by numerous shorter flights for the four-person capsule to help improve tech that will protect Mars-bound astronauts from radiation in deep space and the physiological impairments of a zero-G environment. One of those flights, set for the mid to late 2020s, will involve a rendezvous with an asteroid redirected by a robot spacecraft to orbit the moon. What? they're going to rendezvous with an asteroid that is going to... Wow. Okay. The mission will dock the robotic spacecraft carrying the asteroid and then collect samples. So I'm assuming this is going to be a fairly small asteroid. Either that or it's a really large robotic probe that's collecting that asteroid. Interesting. On its first flight Thursday, the Orion capsule will orbit Earth twice, carrying 1,200 sensors. After a flight of 4 hours and 24 minutes, Orion will drop into the Pacific Ocean about 600 miles from San Diego, slow to about 17 miles per hour by large parachutes, three of them to be exact. The USS Anchorage will collect the capsule. And I actually saw the video of the splashdown. I completely forgot about that till now. But that is just, wow. It just looks just like an Apollo splashdown, really. But, and they actually shot that video with a Predator UAV. Sorry, that's a drone. Predator or a Reaper, I can't remember which it was, but NASA has one of those, and they actually filmed it with that coming down. That was just sexy. Lockheed Martin, LMT, is lead, I guess that's the stock symbol, never mind, is lead contractor for the project. The first flight is designed primarily to test the craft's thermal protection, the largest shield system in the history of spaceflight, according to NASA. Okay, how big is this friggin' capsule then? The distance is needed to help Orion achieve a speed that could top 20,000 miles per hour to test the thermal shield. When I hear thermal shield, I'm thinking of like the heat shield on the bottom of a capsule, which is what this is. But I guess that might mean it's the shielding, like the all-around shielding for the capsule too. I guess, I don't know. The distance is needed to help Orion achieve a speed that could top 20,000 miles per hour to test the thermal shield. As a deep space capsule designed to return to Earth, it's not even deep space, it's just to Mars. Anyways, Orion's speed will generate re-entry temperatures at 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit, much higher than vessels descending from low Earth orbit, such as Russia's Soyuz capsules or the retired space shuttle fleet, or the X-32, the little mini shuttle they have now that the U.S. Air Force has. The Apollo missions had to manage re-entry heat up to 5,000 degrees. A Mars mission may well test 6,000 degrees. Okay, so it is a heat shield, and re-entry heat shield. But at the same time, why don't they just slow the vehicle down, and then it's like, oh, look, you just returned it from low Earth orbit. Or, you know what I mean? Like, they can slow stuff down before it gets there. But maybe it's just quicker to do this, I don't know. The first flight will also test Orion's launch abort system, which is the thing that, you know, if something gets all screwy, you hit the button and it, boom, it blows up, or, you know, the escape tower flies off the capsule and everybody's not dead. A powered crew escape pod that is certified to work between launch and 300,000 feet. So above that, you're screwed. Although I guess above that, you'd be dead anyways, probably. The system, which responds in milliseconds if an emergency is detected, is the most sophisticated NASA has flown to date, according to Kevin Rivers, the manager who oversees the system. It's all commanded by the computers. There's no human in the loop, he says. Oh, that's kind of a scary concept, but whatever. The initial flight will be conducted with a Delta IV rocket built by the United Launch Alliance, a joint venture of Boeing and Lockheed Martin. Future Orion missions will be powered by the Space Launch System, the largest rocket in NASA history. It is scheduled to fly an Orion mission in 2018. Very, very sexy. Man, I want to be in on that. That'd be freaking awesome. And speaking about freaking in freaking lasers news, thank you to WeOndy for this one. Locked on lasers burn through leaves on train lines. Yeah, this is from December 3rd. This is from newscientist.com. If they won't budge, zap them. Yeah, train-mounted lasers are being tested as a way of clearing the path for high-speed trains. What requires such forceful removal? Leaves. Every autumn, fallen leaves are a dangerous problem for railways in much of Europe and North America. passing trains, squash leaves on the track into a hard Teflon-like residue that coats the rails, making it difficult for wheels to grip them. Which means, you know, your train goes ricocheting off the tracks and kills everybody and explodes. Or explodes and kills everybody, I guess. Passing trains, I already read that part. The reduced contact between... I am not reading properly today, as per usual. The reduced contact between wheels and track also affects signaling systems that are meant to keep trains from colliding. According to Network Rail in the UK, leaves caused 4.5 million hours of passenger delays in 2013. Wow. Last month, Dutch Railways began trials to zap leaves into oblivion with lasers. Angled downwards and fitted just in front of a wheel, the lasers vaporize built-up residue as the train passes. They also dry the rails to prevent new leaves from piling up. Yeah, because wet leaves stick to each other and wet leaves stick to anything that's wet. So, yeah, okay. And I'm gonna start highlighting these things. Here we go. Dry rails, yes. This gives the trains better traction, allowing faster acceleration and braking, which is, of course, what you want in a train, particularly the braking. Using lasers to clear leaves was first proposed in 1999 by a UK company called Laser Thor. That's kind of a sexy name. Which developed a laser with a temperature of 5,000 degrees Celsius that was strong enough to zap leaves 25,000 times per second. Holy crap. This worked really well in the lab, which everything always does, says a Network Rail spokesperson. But when fitted to moving trains, the vibrations make it hard to keep the laser focused on the rail, he says. Network Rail eventually opted for high-powered water jets instead. The focusing problem is one thing that the Dutch team has been working on. The system also briefly shuts off the laser whenever vibrations make it miss the rail. And if vibrations are a big thing, then that would be quite off, I would imagine. If they are to get a second chance, lasers will once again have to compete with water jets, as well as jets of a sandy gel mixture known as sandite and manual scrubbing. But lasers have advantages. Sand and water tanks need frequent refilling, and water jets can damage the rails and the substrate below. So the advantages of lasers, it's just like the MechWarrior series of games. You got all your weapons. You got ballistic weapons, you got missile weapons, which are all fine and dandy, and you got laser weapons. But really, what does it come down to? Your ammunition and energy-based weapons, i.e. laser-based weapons, have infinite ammunition type thing. So you don't have to reload, you don't have to worry about running out of ammo. So yeah, so it's the way of the future. According to Malcolm Higgins, the founder of Laser Thor, who is also an advisor for the Dutch project, lasers will not damage the tracks. This is because the wavelength of 1,064 nanometers means they are absorbed by the leaves and other organic matter such as oil, but not by metal. So energy from the lasers is reflected off the rails into your eyes and blinding nearby drivers of cars and, you know, make them blow up and all other fun stuff. Nah, I'm just kidding. But that is actually a pretty cool idea. So, I mean, seriously, like, all this technology and stuff that we should have this stuff a long time ago, but, whatever, at least 20 years ago, 15 years ago here now, according to this, but at least they're testing it out still, so that's awesome. In Space Probe News, yes, there's more space news today. Actually, crap, I don't even have that one open. Or do I? Oh, crap. Hang on. Nope, I have it open. I had it out of order. My bad. Okay, in Space Probe News. Thank you to Exec for this one. Comet harbors unusual water, Rosetta finds. This is the Rosetta probe that landed on... Oh, crap, what the hell's the name of that asteroid? Anyways, the asteroid looks like a rubber duck or something like that out in space that it actually landed on. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Water, but not as we know it, has been found around the comet that the Rosetta probe landed on last month. The discovery made by an instrument on board the Rosetta spacecraft calls into question a leading theory about how the Earth got its oceans. The findings suggest that rocky asteroids, rather than icy comets, may have been chiefly responsible for bringing water to Earth in its early history. The Rosetta mission hits the deadlines. The Rosetta mission hit the headlines when the spacecraft deployed a robot lander, Belay. That's an Egyptian name, and I'm probably screwing it up too. That made a dramatic descent to Comet 67P. Churyumov-Gerasimenko. November 12th of this year. Data from the lander, which bounced twice before coming to a rest near the wall of a crater, are yet to yield scientific results. But an instrument on the orbiting Rosetta mothership has come up with a surprise after analyzing water vapor enveloping the comet. Unlike the Earth's oceans, the vapor largely consists of water with a different atomic flavor, containing deuterium, the heavy isotope of hydrogen. So that's, H3O, I believe? That's the stuff they use for cooling, that's the stuff they use for cooling Canadian-built nuclear reactors. Other standard types, I don't think, use deuterium. The amount of deuterium compared with normal hydrogen in the comet's water is 3 times greater than it is in water on Earth. This suggests that the so-called Jupiter family comets, such as 67P, cannot be assumed to have created the oceans on Earth. Okay. This suggests that, I already read that part. In contrast, meteorites falling on Earth that originate from the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter tend to match the composition of Earth's ocean water. Professor Catherine Altweg, principal investigator for Rosetta's Rosina mass spectrometer that carries out chemical analysis based on light signals, said, "Our finding rules out the idea that Jupiter family comets contain solely Earth ocean-like water, and adds weight to models that place more an emphasis on asteroids as the main delivery mechanism for the Earth's oceans." Members of the Rosetta team reported the results in the journal Science. The European Space Agency's British Rosetta project scientist Dr. Matt Taylor said, "We knew that Rosetta's in-situ analysis of this comet was always going to throw up surprises for the bigger picture of solar system science." Which, yeah, when you have a scientific first, i.e. landing a space probe on an asteroid, things are going to be turned upside down. Etc. This outstanding observation certainly adds fuel to the debate about the origin of the Earth's water. As Rosetta continues to follow the comet on its orbit around the Sun throughout next year, we'll be keeping a close watch on how it evolves and behaves, which will give us unique insight into the mysterious world of comets and their contribution to our understanding of the evolution of the solar system. Scientists have long wondered about the oceans because the Earth was so hot when it formed 4.6 billion years ago that all of its original water, should have boiled off. Yet today, two-thirds of the Earth's surface is covered in water. The most likely explanation is that the Earth cooled down, collisions with water-bearing objects such as collisions with water-bearing objects such as comets or asteroids filled up the ocean basins. So that's very interesting there. Now, what you're saying here is, oh yeah, we don't think it came from this type of comet because blah, 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 blah. Well, there's also other types of comets. There's comets, asteroids, etc. They're coming from outside, way outside, and from different angles and trajectories and all the crap from the solar system, right? So this one comes from, wherever. So maybe it's come from one spot that, hey, there's some stuff over there, but not enough of the stuff you want. So there's another spot, you know what I mean? It's like, hope people understand what I'm trying to say here. I got the whole crazy talking going on again here today. But into the next story here then, in Where's Your Papers News? Thank you to Weondi for this one. The state of Iowa is going to have smartphone driver's licenses, which is a horrible idea in my opinion. The Iowa Department of Transportation said it plans to pilot a smartphone driver's license program that could one day make plastic licenses a thing of the past. "It's really moving beyond a static thing," said Mark Lowe, director of the Iowa DOT Motor Vehicles Division, henceforth known as DMV, Iowa DMV, in an interview with the Washington Post. "The concept is to not only host the license in an app, but to be able to send push notifications about, say, traffic, or if a user's license is about to expire, Lo said. He said he is not aware, quote-unquote, of any other state that has a similar program. A group of state employees that travels frequently for work will pilot the program in the next 6 months, and the Department of Transport will determine the next steps for wider use, including giving Iowans the option to try the smartphone license while waiting for the plastic version to arrive in the mail. Actually, that's a cool idea, to an extent, though, I guess. Why wait for your new license? I think for us, right now, what we want to focus on is the option, Lo said. The state will also have to educate officers, those who sell alcohol and tobacco, and the TSA to ensure that the licenses are recognized. But Lo thinks digital licenses are the way of the future. People really expect to use those mobile devices, he said. Iowa is one of more than 30 states that lets drivers show proof of insurance on their phone, according to the Des Moines Register. Click on the link there. So that's actually a very cool idea. I actually do like that. Having it on your phone, however, I think is a stupid idea. Because, oh, it's my driver's license. It's on my phone. Let's say your phone's dead. Well, and let's say, I don't know, you don't have a charger in your car. Or maybe you need your license for like identification purposes or something like that, and you know, don't have your car with you, and your phone's dead. Right? Like you went somewhere, blah, 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 you need to show your ID, and your phone's dead. How good of an idea is that when that happens? There's no redundancy. Yeah, you can carry a power bank or these little external battery chargers. Yes, you could. But what happens if that fails, or what happens if it's 7 juice, or this or that, or whatever, you know what I mean? This is why the hard copy stuff is still a good idea. It's a pain in the ass carrying in your pocket all the time, but at the same time, it doesn't run out of battery. It's like a book, like the whole e-reader versus paper book, like actual book argument is that, oh yes, well, your e-reader can hold 50,000 books, and it's smaller than a standard, you know, paperback novel, but at the same time, the battery dies, you can't read any of those 50,000 books. You're screwed. Whereas a paper book, you can open it, you can read it in low light, not the best thing to do, obviously, but you can read it in low light, you could read it on a plane, you can read it at the beach, which is kind of whatever, I don't know why the hell you read it at the beach, but, you know what I mean? There's that redundancy factor there. It's that the only way you can really kill the book is by burning it or soaking it or something like that. Right? But it's running out of power source. So this is the same thing with this, like good concept and all that stuff. What they should do is they should launch a, like those e-readers, I don't know what the hell they are, Kindle or whatever, the ones with the e-ink screens in them, just a monochrome black and white e-ink screen. Because those things, like the 6-inch one, any of the size versions of those, will run for, I don't know, like 30 days or 60 days or something like that on a single charge because the screen uses so little energy. All they need to do is just make a small device that's really thin. I'd say maybe about the same size as a smartphone, maybe a little bit smaller. Let's say the size of a credit card. They could do that. They can make something the size of a credit card. And super as thin as you can, and keep that in your pocket, and then you can put your ID on that. If you're gonna do something like this, then do that and have it on the e-ink screen so that, yeah, you have to charge it up once every 30 days, but then it's got 30 days of charge as opposed to on your smartphone, which you'd be lucky to get 1 or 2 days out of the half time, depending on how people use it. So that's just my insight on that. Very cool idea, very shitty implementation though, at the current time. And in cover your ass news. This is what I heard on the radio a few days ago, actually. Does that work? This is from the Globe and Mail. Police can search cell phones and arrests without warrant, Supreme Court rules. This is in Canada, obviously. In Canadian. In a crime ruling that earned it rare praise from the federal government, the Supreme Court of Canada said police may search cell phones without a warrant when they make an arrest. Which is a very scary thing. Cell phones are the bread and butter of the drug trade. bread and butter, everything else really, like normal life. The majority said in a 4-3 ruling. It said police have been given the extraordinary power to do a warrantless search, to do warrantless searches during an arrest under common law rules developed by judges over centuries. Because of the importance of prompt police investigations. Until now, those searches typically included purses and briefcases. Civil liberties groups had urged the court to exempt cell phones. Some random crap there. I'm not reading. Kevin Fearon, whatever your name is, was suspected in the armed robbery of a jewelry kiosk at a Toronto flea market in 2009. When he was arrested, a police officer found a cell phone on him and looked quickly through text messages and photographs. The officer found a message saying, "We did it!" And he found a picture of a handgun. Okay. Mr. Fearon, convicted at his trial, argued that the search of his cell phone was illegal. The Supreme Court said that from now on, police would need to provide detailed notes on what it searched and found. It upheld Mr. Fearon's conviction. Prompt access by law enforcement to the contents of a cell phone may serve the purpose of identifying accomplices or locating and preserving evidence that might otherwise be lost or destroyed. Justice Thomas Cromwell wrote for the majority, joined by Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin and Justices Richard Wagner and Michael Moldaver, whatever your name is. The majority said the search must be tailored to its purpose, which will generally mean that only recent emails, texts, photos, and the call log will be available. Texts and photos and call log can be killed, you know, pretty easily and stuff. I mean, you can delete that whenever you want, which is fine. But look at the the emails. We're going to just check the recent emails. Okay, when you open up someone's email app on their phone or email app, or their email on their computer or whatever, what comes up? Probably everything that they've had sent or received on that email account since they started that email account. So they're going to just check the... Oh, we're just going to check the recent stuff. Yeah, my ass there. They'll check everything. Justice Minister Peter McKay lauded the ruling. Quote, "That decision to me seems to strike the exact balance that Canadians would expect when it comes to protecting the privacy rights, while at the same time putting moderate tools in the hands of police to protect Canadians when it comes to their investigations," he told reporters. The Supreme Court has repeatedly objected to the Conservative government's tough crime laws in the past 3 years. Its approach to cell phone searches is in contrast to that of the United States Supreme Court. It ruled last summer that police need a warrant to search cell phones as part of an arrest. That's in the States, so that's The minority of the Canadian court said the majority have given the police extraordinary power, tossing that phrase back at their colleagues. Searches may go on endlessly in a seized phone, which can continue to generate evidence long after the arrest. Andrew Mashekarakatsanis, sorry buddy, wrote, joined by Justice Rosalie Abella and Justice Louis Labelle. Justice Carrick was the only judge appointed by Prime Minister Stephen Harper in the minority. Chief Justice McLaughlin was the only non-Harper appointee in the minority. Benjamin Berger, a law professor at York University's Osgoode Hall Law School in Toronto, said the court is softening rights protections. He pointed to the first search and seizure ruling under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in the 1984 case of Hunter versus Seltham, when the Supreme Court said that warrantless searches are inherently unreasonable. Those strong rights protections of the early Charter years are very firmly in the rearview mirror, unquote. The court has taken a strong stand in other recent cases for the privacy of personal computers. It ruled last November that a police warrant for a house search in a marijuana grow-op case did not give the police the power to search computers or cell phones found in the house unless a judge has specifically given permission to do so. Very, very interesting. Now, the big thing that I think with this, I'm kind of on the fence with this because, yeah, if there's like a grow-op, which, yeah, how bad is that really? I don't know. But I don't know, let's say there's a, I don't know, Hell's Angels or something like that, just for an example, a gang or whatever, and you're gonna go kill somebody, and you arrest somebody, and blah, blah, blah. Then yeah, if you know that they were, but there's gotta be some different levels to this. I think that if you caught a guy robbing a bank, or in the act of murdering somebody, or whatever, one of the big crimes, right? Yeah, your stuff should be searched. Like that makes sense. If you are, I don't know, this essentially, just the way I see it is that if I'm driving down the street and a cop pulls me over, and because they do that sometimes. I mean, I was pulled over when I was living in Calgary. I was driving down the street, had my I had my girlfriend at the time with me. It was back in 2007. I was driving my truck down the street, and there was cops behind me. I just got gas, and there were cops at the gas station, and I left, and I was driving at normal speed. You know, I don't have to speed anywhere. I'm driving a huge freaking truck. What's the point? It's kind of a big target. And I was in a fast lane, and I was sitting at a light, and the cops are behind me, whatever. And then I get going, and if there's a cop behind me, I always pull over. I'm more vigilant about how I'm acting in the vehicle and stuff. I always am. But I'm like, okay, there's a cop behind me. I'm in the fast lane. I'm just going to get in front of everybody, which did not involve speeding. I just got in front of everybody, you know, gradually got past, and I put the blinker on, I pull over to the right. As soon as I put the blinker on, I pull into the slow lane, you know, at a normal pace, the cops threw the lights on just like that. They pulled me over. So I got pulled over like between the highway, it's kind of like a major street, and the off ramp to go into the community or whatever. I got pulled over right in that friggin' wedge there. We're not supposed to drive. Right there is where I got pulled over. Like, thank you, bastards. Like, there wasn't anywhere else for me to pull over. So I got pulled over there. And, you know, the cop comes up to the door, up to the window, and he's like, oh, I see your license registration. I'm like, yeah, sure. Here you go. Like, you were driving, like, all over the place back there? I'm like, and that's what he said to me. He's like, you were driving all over the place back there. Like, why are you driving all over the place? And I just looked at him, like, seriously? Like, with all due respect, officer, like, I was not driving all over the place. I'm driving, you know, a 3/4-ton pickup truck at 60 kilometers an hour. It's, you know, I'm not driving all over the place. I put my blinkers on, you know, I drove slowly, I merged properly, and I got pulled over by you guys. So with all due respect, officer, I wasn't, you know, doing what you say I was doing. Plus I had like my girlfriend with me and stuff, like why the hell would I be driving like a maniac? And there are also two cops behind me, which I was like, gassing up beside them, and I watched them follow me out of the gas station. So like, why the hell would I drive all over the place? So they're obviously trying to meet quota. But the thing is, they could technically say, hey, step out of the car, we're gonna search your car, whatever. And by extension, they could say, okay, this is your phone, we're gonna search your phone. So for small shit like that, they can actually get away with a warrant search technically. If they think it's necessary, or if they sort of quote unquote think it's necessary. So I think shit like that is not acceptable. If it's a big thing, if you're in the middle of like a sting or a raid, or if you know the guy, if you're like keeping an eye on a guy that is suspected of being, I don't know, like a terrorist or in a prostitution ring, or something like that, then, or he's gonna murder somebody, or whatever, like his hitman, or whatever, rob a bank, that's fine. You catch them in the act, or you catch them on suspicion of going to be doing an act, or whatever, performing an act, then go ahead and search. But if it's like the little guy that's not doing anything, just these little shitty, oh, I'm gonna pull you over just to meet quota type thing, or, you know, I just don't like the way you look, so I'm gonna search your shit. No, you should not. You search your physical, the stuff you physically have on you, but I don't think you should be able to search your phone. That should be like, sorry, you need a warrant, or you can take me down to the police station or whatever, and then you need to have my lawyer present, or some third party present, which can actually say, okay, and actually keep an eye on you when you're doing it. So, I don't know, this is an okay thing used properly in the proper context at the proper time with proper people, not with everybody, so this is kind of shitty. Yeah, anyways, rant. That's it for the news there. So we have a daily hack. Thank you to Kevin is a geek. Kevin is a geek for this one. This is 3D printed lockpicks, which I don't have in the right order either. Here we go, from Hackaday. Over at the 23B Hackerspace in Fullerton, California, Dano, whatever your name is, had an interesting idea. He took a zip tie and trimmed it to have the same profile of a lockpick. It worked. Not well, mind you, but it worked. After a few issues, the pick disintegrated, but still the concept of picks that you can take through a TSA checkpoint was proven. A few days after this demonstration, C. I don't know who the hell C is, but C realized he had a very fancy object 3D printer at work and thought printing some picks out would be an admirable goal. Oh, picks. They have picks like pictures, but it's actually picks. After taking an image of some picks through the auto tracer in SolidWorks, C had an STL that could be printed on a fancy high-end 3D printer. I'm getting all coffee again. The printer ultimately used for these picks was an Objet 30 Pro with 0.001 inch layer thickness and 600 dpi resolution. After receiving the picks, buddy here dug out an old lock and went to town. The lock quickly yielded to the pick. And once again, the concept of plastic lock picks was proven. Although the picks worked, there were a few problems. Only half the picks were sized properly to fit inside of a lock. Two picks also broke in 15 minutes, something that won't happen with traditional metal picks. So once the models are figured out, it is easy to reproduce them time and time again. A perfect lock pick design is then trivial, and making an injection mold becomes possible. They might still break, but they'll be far easier to manufacture and simple to replace, and also a hell of a lot cheaper. So that's very, very cool. So 3D printing lock picks. That's something that we should probably all have. And then we have, in Cyberpunk Kit, we have two different things. First, from Log of War, we have bug out trailers. Pretty much just camper trailers that are, well, let me read it here. Camp models. Every one of the survivalist camp models, this is survivalistcamps.com, I guess. Every one of the survivalist camp models comes equipped with high quality steel frames, superior insulated walls, roof, and floors, high clearance axles, which is good for, you know, off-roading and shit, wood burning stove, perfect, solar panel, and a propane light. They are very well insulated and have high axle clearance. We also have many options available, including additional storage batteries, food storage compartment, and don't forget to ask about our camouflage options, of course, because if you're gonna have a bug out trailer, you might want to have some camo options. So this is actually pretty cool. They have like pictures of campers and stuff, and they got five different models here: 19 foot models and 3 25 foot models, and they are pretty sexy, actually. So take a look at those, and now I want one of those. Freaking hell! Cool sight though, and I guess we only have one Cyberpunk kit. So this other one on there yet? It might be for next week. Anyways, in Recomedia we have UAV FPV racing. Thanks to Kevin as a geek for this one. This is a video that is, I don't know, 4.5 minutes long, and it's 3 quadcopters being raced through a forest and crashing into trees and stuff like that. And when Kevin's Geek sent this to me, he was saying that before I even saw the video, he was saying that the lights on the back of the quadcopters make them look like the pod racers or something, like from Star Wars Episode 1 or whatever, right? And actually, if you watch, because they have the big LED, probably like a 12 by 5 or 6 LED panel in the back of them, and they're bright. And holy crap, it actually kind of does remind you of that, so it's pretty freaking sexy. So check that out. I've got about halfway through the video already, and I'm just gonna watch the rest of it down here because this is just awesome. Anyways, well, that's all we have for you today. But don't worry, we'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. Also, I just remembered here, we got the new intro this week, so hopefully it's good to go. Last 2 weeks ago, I used the original newsreel one, but now we're using the new newsreel one. So, yay! This has been a free... Sorry, I'm joking and dying here now. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the show, please distribute. But if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Rant Media website. Thank you to the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information, music, or comments that you'd like to send us, you can reach us at newsreel2@gmail.com, or you can send us the information through our website at newsreel.ca. Also, I would love, really love, I loved all the news submissions and whatnot. That's really awesome. But any music suggestions, that would be freaking awesome too, because I'm having a hell of a time finding music to play in the background and stuff like that. Got some stuff here, well, not in the background today, but, you know, it's a bit difficult. I'm kind of a bit of, let's just delegate all this work. Hey, do you have any music ideas, whatever, send it to me. I'll find it. I'll put it on. Let's get that stuff out there. Anyways, if you like the music in the background, be sure to check out Rant Radio Industrial because it's an awesome channel. We'll be fading out now with a track from Patient Zero called Black Shakes. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. I'm the one who's got the power.
Institute.